Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of amazing individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I have with me a very, very accomplished, a very young advertising marketing guru from Mumbai, India, Sahil Vaidya. Sahil, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sahil is the co-founder of The Minimalist, and he was a part of the Forbes 30 Under 30. So Sahil, let's start talking about The Minimalist. Tell me a little bit about this venture and what was your motivation to start it?
Right. So we define The Minimalist as a creative solutions company, and we work with some of the largest brands in the world to create really inventive and thought-provoking work. So that's who we are in just one line.
Yeah.
The journey started about 7 years ago. In May 2015, that is when the company officially started delivering services to its clients. But the story actually goes back by a few months, even before that.
Mm-hmm.
So Chirag and I, Chirag is my co-founder. So the two of us were batchmates at IIT Bombay, and both of us were studying engineering. And both of us had two things in common. One was that we both were really passionate about creativity. So while he was extremely passionate about design, things like ambigrams and creating minimal designs, I was really passionate about humor. So I would just loiter around writing jokes all day, and that's literally what I would do. So both of us had this deep passion for creativity, albeit in different forms. The second thing that was common amongst the both of us was that we had really bad grades. So that sort of got us together, and we thought we anyway aren't doing anything in college in terms of academics. So why don't we see what we can do with our creativity? And while traveling with him for our internships at the end of our third year, that's when I met him, we sort of realized that what if we combine these two things and probably make a Facebook page and see where it goes. So the impetus, or rather the input was the fact that there were so many social issues happening in India and there was no one really talking about it. So we thought maybe we can combine our skill sets and maybe we can just start a Facebook page, put out really minimal designs on these social issues, some very thought-provoking and witty visuals, and let's see where it goes from there. So after coming up with 10, 15 really bad names, I came up with The Minimalist for that Facebook page, because minimalism was a very niche trend back then, even globally, leave it or India. I wanted to use that to create some content that would really hit people hard and make them think. So that's literally how we started The Minimalist as a Facebook page, started putting out some very simple, witty, and thought-provoking visuals and everything that's happening in the country, and suddenly that started going viral. And that's literally how we were able to build an organic community of over 1 lakh people, and that sort of attracted a lot of brands. So they started saying, if you're doing this for fun, why don't you work for us? Amazing. And that is how in the next few months we ended up starting a company without even intending.
So tell me, Sahil, about one or two of your interesting campaigns about a few brands.
What I was just describing was, of course, the pre-journey. But I think we have done a lot of interesting work for a lot of brands. Very recently, we came up with the entire crafting life proposition for Mahindra Life Spaces. So it's one of the leading real estate developers. So we have actually worked with them to sort of create a larger purpose for the brand. And we launched that via brand film. And we've been managing all of their different properties across India. So it's a 1,000 crore plus brand. And this was a very good project where we actually brought out the purpose, because when you're selling homes, it's about something more. And that's very relevant in branding these days. One of the big conversations everywhere is why, or how rather, can brands be relevant? And that's what we are trying to do. You know, before just selling a product, how do you take a step back, understand why the brand exists and how it can be relevant to the consumer? We combine the two to create this proposition, which will now become an IP and go on for years and years and define the brand.
So, you know, the fact that you worked with, you know, so many different brands, my next question to you, Sahil, is what goes into building a successful brand?
There are lots of things, and probably there's no right answer to that question. But I think, like I was just defining, I think there are a few things that are very critical for a brand to sort of keep in mind. And it's, of course, to understand why they are in business, right? And this is where I think a lot of brands get it wrong, right, in the first step. Not get it wrong because they don't know it, but probably because that has never been an input in everything that they are doing. So, and this typically is why you will see that a lot of new age startups and all have it very sorted, because they are entrepreneur-led, founder-driven. the core purpose and philosophy is very clear, or rather very clearly articulated, which sort of becomes the brief for a marketing partner to sort of pick it up and take it ahead from there. So why a business exists beyond making money and selling stuff to its customers is paramount. And arriving at that while making it very relevant to the customer is what we really call positioning, right? So positioning is what position you occupy in the customer's mind. It's jargon free. It's just like a word or a couple of words that come to a customer's mind when they think about your brand. Now, if you can really capture that, make it relevant to your own purpose for existence and hammer that message over time, that is when really associations start forming. And that's what marketing is all about.
I agree. And, you know, one of the other things that I have seen over, you know, four and a half decades of working with brands is that brands are living beings. I mean, I've often said they're like babies. You know, you've got to keep on providing nurturing and sustenance to a child. You've got to do the same thing for brands.
Absolutely.
How, in your opinion, should be done for them to stay long, to stay relevant for a long time? I mean, you have brands which are 100 years old and you have brands that die in 1 year.
I think for a brand to stay relevant, of course, we'll be talking beyond the business aspects. Of course, the business has to stay relevant. Many brands, I think, die because the business itself became outdated. From a brand, on a brand level, I think, again, the word that you used in your question itself is the most defining element of the answer. It's being relevant. Relevant to the times, relevant culturally. As we have seen, you know, morality and ideas shift from generation to generation. I think many brands are stuck with a principle of morals that belong to a previous generation, where they are not able to adapt to how the new people think and what are the common lexicons or the ideas that float around, or the common ways of getting things done by this new generation who probably are the customers of tomorrow. So if you realize that your audience has sort of changed, the demographic has changed over time, we also need to be culturally tuned into what kind of conversations they are having, what their interests are, and reinvigorate or reinvent your own positioning to stay relevant with the times. So I think it's a lot about cultural attunement and literally staying relevant as a person. I mean, just like a person gets outdated, a brand is the same thing, right? So I think that's what we have to do.
Very well, sir. Great response. So my next question to you is that, you know, I remember when I was growing up in the early 80s, in the corporate world and 80s, etc., communication of a brand was either through a, you know, a billboard or through a full page newspaper ad or through the cinema. This has continuously evolved over a period of time. And now that the whole thing is digital, social media, etc., my question to you is that how is communication for the brand evolving and changing over the last so many years?
So as we saw, I think last year, I think the pandemic especially accelerated this, but digital has finally started commanding a very big percentage of the spends. It's I don't remember the exact numbers, but probably it's now at equal footing with all the other traditional platforms. I think we are going to see a further shift when devices become even more widespread, when probably we get 5G or even 6G, when computational power increases to deliver real-time data. I think very new experiences will abound, and that will once again probably change the face of marketing. So I think we are already at the tail end of probably the last revolution, which was the proliferation of devices and digital content and apps, and probably something really new is now about to unfold, which nobody probably has the right answers to.
And based on all the work that you are doing, how are traditional traditional platforms like print and media, TV, how are they adapting to the onslaught from the handheld devices and the other such similar platforms?
I think so our business is predominantly integrated, and a lot of clients are mainly focused on newer ways of doing things. So we have not been very heavy on the print side or radio side in a traditional platform, but I have seen that it's been a tough time for traditional platforms. I think, and in fact, COVID was a real death blow for many of those businesses, very unfortunately. But I think people who produce TV commercials or who actually build those bigger brand narratives, let's say building radio ads and all of that, those people, their skills are not totally outdated today. They are still relevant because what matters is how do you craft a story and again, narrow down to that positioning and turn that into a creative. So radio ads have become Spotify ads, TV ads have become Hotstar or Netflix commercials or whatnot, Hotstar ads, right? So the craft of storytelling is still very much relevant, but the format, the placements, the way it has to be done, the duration, those have all changed. And I think everyone has to sort of keep up with what is the new inventory, what is the new format of delivery, and how do you keep your message relevant in those new formats as well.
And yet, you know, with so many different social media platforms, how does a brand manager or any or the minimalist decide which platform a brand should select?
I think, again, it boils down to where your customers really are, both your current ones and the ones that you aspire to get on board. And I think that predominantly dictates the agenda for your social media strategy also. In fact, if TikTok hadn't been banned, I think it would have been a very big platform, because as we are seeing from our studies and other geographies in the West, TikTok is a really big platform over there, and brands are really vying to crack a TikTok strategy. All the big influencers who are big on, let's say, newsletters or YouTube are now having a dedicated TikTok strategy also, which I'm seeing with a lot of content creators and influencers. We might have a similar platform emerging right now in India. We don't know. But nevertheless, I think, for example, we work with luxury customers, some of them like Tata Click Luxury. So we have to really see, what is the relevant platform for these brands, in the sense, where are these customers really discovering products, or where are they exchanging ideas on what new ideas they want to look for? Similarly, a B2B brand that we're working with, let's say in the Europe, I think that audience is very different, right? The customer journey is very different. We probably would have to do account-based marketing on LinkedIn, right? Or probably have a specific newsletter strategy for them to drive curated leads. So it depends a lot on the business objective and what that brand is trying to get from the specific niche customers. So it varies for all brands. And I think a vanilla common approach is what is not working these days, because you can't invest the same amount of energy everywhere.
Well said. And, you know, you spoke a few minutes back about influencers. There is a whole new breed of influencers who has now come into the branding, advertising, marketing space. And from a situation of where it was primarily Bollywood and cricket stars, now there's this new breed of influencers. How do brands react to what influencers are doing, and how are they good for the business?
I think the democratization of this influencer business has been probably very good, because it has given many more people opportunities to create careers and become content creators and add relevant value to niche audiences. Just hearing someone say that, you know, creators are much more accessible for their content consumers versus a A-grade celebrity who is very alienating or who's probably not very relatable. But at the same time, I think there are risks of one overload happening, because people follow creators not for the ads, but for the content.
Correct.
So I've also spoken to a lot of creators who are loathing about how, you know, for their revenue, they have to do these things, but then there's a trade-off that they have to manage between too much advertising and, you know, too little. So that's a big trade-off, and consumers, of course, will probably slowly start tuning out if creators just are promoting products left, right, center. We're already starting to see some levels of fatigue, and people are already saying things like, you know, how performance marketing is destroying the internet by making it, you know, moving billboard wherever we go, there are 10 ads plastered on the screen, right? That's probably the same fate might be for influencers. At the same time, there's a big risk of the brand also having a fallout if the influencer does something that becomes a subject of controversy. So, like, for example, recently, even the person who wrote the book for Will Smith, that author, even though he had nothing to do with that Will Smith controversy, faced a lot of flack because he didn't condemn Will Smith for his actions. So the levels to which people will start associating brands with celebrities or influencers and start blaming them or boycotting them is reaching unheard proportions.
Well said. And yet, you know, when I remember when I used to talk to agencies, you know, four decades ago, to what I see today, there's a lot of technology that young agencies and young people like you are using. How is technology changing the way advertising organizations or advertising agencies are functioning?
So it's changing things constantly, and I think it'll change things in a much bigger way probably in the next 5 to 7 years. One thing is that we also realized this when we were starting, and we decided to ensure that we have some bit of technological expertise also at our end, which is why we have thankfully built a UI UX department specifically that works with brands to create very delightful user experiences across web, mobile, and other devices, right? And this we have realized over time is a very critical offering because it ties the entire customer experience for the brand through, right? So if a brand does some level of marketing or build some associations with its brand and people ultimately land onto a website or an app or landing page, that experience also needs to be in sync with the marketing and also needs to be smooth and understand the customer's mental models to deliver the smoothest experience possible to enable transactions. So this entire piece of UI UX and technology has been very critical. So that is one place where we've been fortunate to build an offering, and we've seen a good response over there as brands are now warming up to the value of design in their entire UX and you know, customer journey. Secondly, I think a lot of things are getting automated and there is much more measurability. So I think performance and conversion rate optimization is very big for specifically e-commerce companies or internet brands. Things are getting automated. So now you see the proliferation of things like Canva or, you know, even content generation tools or social media management tools, all things that we earlier needed hands and decks for are slowly getting chipped away at by, you know, algorithms. And the final thing is, I think, the entire thing about the metaverse, which is taking over everyone's minds. And nobody knows how it's going to change advertising and how big it is going to be and how soon it will be. But yeah, right, lots of things happening.
And how will it function in a three-dimensional mode when you're physically not present?
Right. Isn't it very interesting? Lots of questions to answer, and probably these are very early days, probably like the .com days of the internet.
I agree with you. Another question, Sahil, is, you know, you spoke about TikTok. Now, it's a phenomenal platform, but from a communicator's perspective, you now have to reduce your message to, say, 7 seconds or 5 seconds. How do you manage to condense a powerful message in such a short period of time?
Oh, from a possibility perspective, it's very much possible. In fact, very interesting trivia. Before Facebook introduced its thumb stoppers, I think back in 2019 or 18, we had already started doing something called videos, in the sense minimal videos. And we were trying to produce the same stories that we do as the minimalist, but in a video format in 10 to 15 seconds. So we wanted to deliver very hard-hitting, powerful messages in probably a couple of frames that lasts for 10, 15 seconds. And this is something that even a lot of brands have sort of taken inspiration from, and a lot of our clients like HDFC Bank and all have been big on these videos and all. So it's very much possible, but at the same time, it's a part of the content strategy. It's not going to be your main brand film probably, or it's not going to be the commercial that ends up going viral and you know, becomes an IP for that particular product, right? It's a part of the content strategy. It probably serves a different purpose than your traditional 30-minute DVC or something like that.
Well said. My next question, Sahil, is, you know, that there is a very clear differentiation between the different demographic profiles of your customers. And yet there is data to suggest that by 2030, 80% of wealth will be in the hands of people who are 60 plus. But most marketers think that their biggest market is for millennials and Gen Zs. How are you as an agency reconciling this big gap that exists between the expectations of these two distinct markets?
I think that's a very interesting point, something that I haven't even pondered a lot over, but we definitely need to. And I think one of the answers is to always keep your eyes open, because many times we get bogged down by our own preconceived biases. So, you know, for example, if I hold a line of thought that we have to do the latest things, which probably target teenagers and youngsters, probably you might miss the bus, because, you know, surprise, it's all about marketing to the older generation who have all the wealth. At the same time, you might just see the fact that there's a generational wealth transfer also. Correct. And that the new youngsters become the biggest spenders and decision makers. So even in education, you see this. While the product is used by the kid, there are various influencers. Probably the parents are the decision makers, and the kid also sort of plays a role. So it's a very complex dynamic in this. What our role is to always keep our eyes open, constantly look at the new data and try to be as good as the entire spectrum of skill set, because you know, focusing on just one is leaving us in a very precarious position if that hypothesis turns out to be false as well.
Well said. So my last question to you, and this is for the many people who will listen to our conversation, what would you say are three lessons our viewers and listeners should take away or could take away from our conversation today?
Do you want me to restrict it to the world of marketing or can it
no,
be
no,
general?
No. You can talk about your own life lessons also.
Okay. So in general, I think, you know, over the last 7 years, we have had a very fortunate journey. And I think while a lot of mistakes were made, a lot of crash and burn scenarios happened, but ultimately it's been full of learnings. So a couple of points that I would like to share that helped me keep my sanity is that number one, I think reading very widely and extensively has tremendously helped me. I think a lot of entrepreneurship, and even if you're working a job, a lot of it comes down to the quality of decisions that you make. And the decisions are made in the best manner possible when you have a clear and sharp mind, right? If you are always anxious or stressed or distracted, or, you know, are inundated with really bad junk food for your mind, you can't make those good decisions. So I think one thing that is very paramount for everyone is to constantly read widely and deeply. Read across subjects, engage in interdisciplinary reading and thinking. And probably some of these subjects might not even seem like they have immediate value, but they do. You know, subjects like history or philosophy or science or mathematics or even biographies of business leaders. There's so much to learn. There's so much ignorance in the world, but somehow we are probably not reading as much as we should. So I think that's number one advice.
Correct.
In fact, just a meta thing, I don't even like giving advice. So number two thing is to really know where you should take your advice from. And I think Ray Dalio has a good framework. He says that you should take advice from believable people. And by believable, he means that in the field that you're seeking advice, they should have been there and done that and executed successfully without, you know, being aided by luck in the field in which you want advice.
Yeah.
And triangulate with 3-4 believable people when you're taking advice. So I think one part of this is also to know whom to take advice from and whom not to take advice from. Because a lot of the time, people are playing different games. You know, you might be, for example, I run a services business. If I take advice from a very high growth, 10x growth tech startup who's raising boatloads of money, probably his advice will be very good, but not really relevant for me. He's playing a different game. I'm playing a different game. That's number two. And number three, I think very important is just meditate. Just meditate and understand the human condition, understand the nature of impermanence, and that'll help you become equanimous and not take things too seriously, because ultimately we are all going to die.
Amazing.
So
What amazing advice. And Sahil, on that note of read widely, take advice from people who you can believe. And the third one is to meditate. Thank you so much for speaking to me. Thank you for speaking to me about The Minimalist, about your amazing journey, about what went into building The Minimalist. Thank you for speaking to me about digital marketing, advertising, communication, and thank you for your great lessons. Thank you again and good luck.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.